Welcome to the talk show dedicated to the wine industry. It's All About Wine. With your host, winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida State's Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call our guest line at any time during the live show at area code 646-727-3235.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is educate people and make wine less confusing and more friendly.
Broadcasting on blogtalkradio.com and worldwide, including the Armed Forces Radio Network.
How this show has grown from, you know, maybe a couple hundred to over 40,000 people. And yeah, that's fantastic.
From coast to coast.
Basser, Kansas.
Deming, New Mexico.
Ithaca, New York.
Knoxville.
Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
Lexington, Kentucky.
Montana.
Moscow, Idaho.
New Hampshire.
New Mexico.
Santa Rosa.
Sevierville, Tennessee.
South Dakota.
The coast of Maine.
The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Westport, Mass.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that. Alba Vineyards.
Blog.10Live.
Boyslip Winery.
Brotherhood.
Camas Prairie Winery.
Candia Vineyards.
Hello, the Borgeses.
Eagle Springs Winery.
Flathead Lake Winery.
Free the Grapes.
Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery.
Hershey Harrisburg Wine Country.
Holy Field Vineyard and Winery.
Tommy Bird Ridge Winery.
Joy Soy of Wine.
Prairie Berry.
Rainborn Wines.
Rocky Top Wine Trail.
Sheila Lauer, the Houston Winery.
Southwest Wine.
Haber Hill.
Ten Spoon.
University of Kentucky Extension.
Vineyard at Hershey.
Vivac Winery.
Walt Vineyard.
Westport Rivers.
Wine Flower.
And around the world.
TheDriftingWinemaker.com.
DonCole.biz.
I just arrived in Bali about 3 days ago.
All About Wine is on.
If you have any questions or anything to talk about, we will be more than happy to talk to you about or search it for you or try to find information for you out there, because there is a lot of information out there about wine.
We do occasionally get off topic.
Belvoir Winery.
The most well-known haunted winery in the Midwest.
I've heard voices at the winery.
Call area code 646-727-3235 and let's talk about wine on air. And now, wine enthusiast and industry representatives, All About Wine is on. Here is your host, Ron.
Thank you, bus people. Thank you, bus people out there today, because we have gorgeous weather here, absolutely gorgeous weather. This is, little noise at the end there. This is what the Chamber of Commerce looks for. This is why people come down here to Florida. This time of year, they come down to vacation. They come down to visit this time of year, and they get the weather like this, and they go, oh, my gosh, I need to move to Florida. It's beautiful. And then they move down here, and then this lasts for like 2 weeks, and the rest of the time it's hot and humid. So if you're planning on coming down here in Florida, visit us in the summer. That way you'll see what it's really like, and you won't be real tempted to move down here right away. We got Mike is not with us tonight. Mike is actually he's working. He has we all have our day jobs, and Mike is stuck working late tonight. Excuse me, because of his job. So I am manning this myself. Not going to be a real long program. The tag said that it was going to be, the program tonight was going to be on a haunted winery book that's coming out. It's not. We're going to talk a little bit about haunted wineries around the country, but I was hoping to get a hold of a couple who are writing a book. They sent me an email and asked if Florida State Winery has any paranormal activities. And I called them and I said, no, we don't, but October is our haunted month. Would you like to be on the program? And they said, well, we just started this book and we don't have any information. We don't have anything going yet, but how about next year? So we've already got a guest book for next October, which does us no good right now as far as that goes, but it will help us come next October, because we have a couple that's writing a book on haunted wineries and haunted liquor stores, restaurants, stuff like that. So from Florida, just from Florida. So it should be interesting. It should be fun. I'm looking forward to that. But Florida State Winery is not really haunted, that I've ever experienced anyway. So what was my engineer just said? Not yet, anyway. Thank you. My engineer just pointed out that, you know, not yet. It may be. Who knows? So we don't have our normal program tonight, but I do have some things I'm going to talk to you about. I might not fill up the hour here, but I do have things I want to talk to you about and a few things I want to pass on to you. And again, you know, we always have things to talk about wine. Never have a problem filling in that. 3 weeks ago, we had a guest, so we had our guest on. Our guest at that time was from Barefoot Winery. I don't know if you remember or not. Hopefully, you're listening to the program regularly, and you do remember. Back on September 19th, Michael Houlihan and Bonnie Harvey from Barefoot Winery was on the program. Got the book, started to read their book. Fantastic, wonderful book. Really, really interesting. A lot of neat information, lightly written, not a heavy read, a nice, easy read. So, I do highly recommend it. It is available all sorts of places, actually. You can pick it up at a lot of stores. You can pick it up on eBay. You can pick it up on Amazon. It's probably available for a download and stuff like that, too. So, it's called The Barefoot Spirit, subtitle How Hardship, Hustle, and Heart Built America's Number One Wine Brand, by the Barefoot Wine founders, Michael Houlihan and Bonnie Harvey. So, get an opportunity. Like I said, start to read. It's a good, easy read. It's a good read. A lot of information. And informative, easy. Gives a great, if you have a business and you're looking at doing a business plan of how to go about promoting yourself, this is almost a must read. There's lots of information. So, wanted to tell you about that. Mike ordered it while we were interviewing them on the program. He's been reading it, and I finally got my book, and I've been reading it also. As we do periodically, we always like to point out a few of the real estate options that are available out there. I got a, five more here I'm going to throw out at you. Grapes are still available all over. If you're looking at buying grapes, they are available all over. California grapes and New York and Pennsylvania, everybody has grapes. This is the time of year. If you are looking to getting grapes, this is the time of year to get your grapes. But real estate, boutique winery, vineyard, and estate. Estates, charming boutique winery, estate, vineyard, and separate guest residence. 7 acres of vines planted in Syrah, Primitivo, Viognier, Orange Muscat, Barbera, and Maverde. 2,186 square foot main residence. If you're interested, give me a call. I would guess it's in California. I don't know. Wine country, yeah, probably. So if you're interested, email me or call me. I'll get you connected. Colibri Ridge Winery and Vineyard. 21.3 acres, 5.8 acres of vineyard, 3,600 square foot winery building, tasting room, equipment included, Tempranillo, Syrah, Primitivo, and Viognier. Again, no price, no California location. Give me a call, I'll get you connected. Shenandoah Valley, 75.97 acres for a possible winery site. 15 planted acres and 5 varieties, all contracted. For those of you who don't know, I say contracted. A lot of growers will contract their grapes out to certain wineries, sign contracts for a period of years or whatever, and then they know they've got good grapes, they know they've got it coming in, they know all that stuff. So if that's what contracted means. So if you're getting this, you've already got yourself a contract for it. So you already got yourself something. 5 acres or 15 planted, 5 varieties all contracted. 3 plus or minus acre pond. A modular home with oversized 2-car garage. And again, for more information, get in touch with me. I will get you to the right people. Another one, winery for sale. We're across the country here. Belvedere, New Jersey. 29 successful years in the wine business, and it is now time to retire. Unique opportunity for an out-of-state winery to expand its visibility in New Jersey, or someone to jump into an existing 22.5-acre turnkey business. All set for you, all ready for you. All you need to do is go in and start making your own wine there. Then you can be a guest on the program here, and we can interview you and say, you say, I found it through you guys, and I got this winery. Check it out at foursisterswinery.com, www.foursisterswinery, W-I-N-E-R-Y.com. You can check that. Asking $1.4 million plus inventory, so check it out. Yeah. Get yourself your own winery on the East Coast there. And one more, Idaho Vineyard and home for sale. 12.52 acres with 9.5 acres in vineyard and fine varietals, it says. Doesn't give you what type. Custom 4,755 square foot home with rim view. Additional building. Excuse me again. Additional building, winery, or second living quarters. Temp regulated shop and other buildings near Boise, $550,000. So wow, that's not a bad price. I already got some vineyards planted and pretty big place and all that. So again, that's close to Boise, Idaho. Interested? Give me a call, or you can email. Or go on to Facebook and just note me on Facebook. Any number of ways you can get a hold of me. If you want to call in tonight, 646-727-3235. If you have any questions about anything, have anything about wine and all that, hey, get in touch with me. We'll talk. Keep it on wine, though, if you will, not other subjects. And you can always go to the Facebook, website, www.allaboutwinebtr.com, or the Facebook is Facebook All About Wine BTR. So if you want to get a hold of me for any of those real estate things, then those are your connections there. A few things I want to pass on to you here before I'm going to talk a little bit about some haunted wineries, and we're going to get into a haunted winery next week. So stay with us. October is haunted month, but I'm having more problems than I thought finding people to talk about haunted wineries. But the next 2 weeks after tonight, we will be talking about haunted wineries, or to a haunted winery. Next week, our guest is going to be Lenore and Larry from Bunker Hill Vineyards. They are located actually here in Florida, not too far from me, about an hour and a half drive from Florida State Winery. They have had lots of paranormal activities and all sorts of things. We are really excited and looking forward to talking to them about haunted wineries and their haunted winery and what's going on there and all that. Also about their winery itself. It's not just going to be about the haunted winery. We are all about wine, by the way, so we will be talking about their winery. Then the following week, on the 24th, Joy's Joy of Wine. Joy's Neighbors has been on us before. She's a blogger, and her Joy's Joy of Wine is a blog that I enjoy very much. It's one of my favorites. I read quite a few different blogs. I enjoy hers very much. She has been visiting wineries and stores and bars and different things around her area. She's up in the Midwest that are haunted and paranormal activities and stuff. So she's going to be on with us on the 24th talking about haunted wineries. Then I think on the 31st, we are not going to have a program because it's Halloween night, and we get really pretty busy here on Halloween night. It's amazing. And just about the time the program will be on, we will be inundated with trick-or-treaters, goblins and ghosts. So the 31st, mark your calendar. We might throw on a best of or something, but as of right now, no new program on the 31st. So that's our schedule for the rest of October. Little trivia quiz here next for you. I'll give you the answers. I'm not going to wait and not give you the answers. I'll give you right away. This is just a few facts and all that. Local Publix's grocery market here, which in Publix is one of the biggest grocery chains in the country. It's right on up there with Kroger's and Safeway and a lot of those others that are around the country. Publix is southeastern United States, real big in Florida here. They do a book quarterly, approximately quarterly. Not always every quarter. Sometimes they'll skip a quarter and stuff. Maybe they just don't have information or whatever. But it's Publix Grape. It's a nice little book. It's got some nice information, a lot of recipes and stuff. And I always enjoy looking forward to getting that. This is out of that magazine. Always like to give credit where credit is due on these. So I'm sure you can subscribe to it. Go to Publix.com and type in Wine Magazine, and then you might be able to subscribe to it that way. I don't know how that works. I don't know if they will ship it around the country or not. But, yeah, it's something to check out. But they have a little trivia thing, little factoid questionnaire or 12 questions here. I'll ask you the questions. I'll give you the answer so that way you're not wondering, and I'll put them right next to it so you won't have to go back and compare notes. Number one, what is the most planted fruit grape in the world? Obviously, it's the grape or fruit crop. I said fruit grape. Boy, I blew that one right away. Fruit crop in the world. That is grapes, without question, one of the biggest. Second, what percentage of the wine produced in the United States comes from California? Oh, we have someone in hold here. I wonder who this is. Excuse me for a second. I'm going to put you on music here, and then I'm going to go check out the person we have in hold, and I'll be right back with you. Hang on for 1 minute. Okay, I've got you on the air now. Someone just called in here. I'm sorry, I didn't get your name. I should have asked you.
My name's Angela. In regards to your question, I'm going to guess 68% of all the grapes in America are grown in California. I was going to say 70, but I think
actually, it's 90.
Ah!
90% of the grapes in the United States comes from California.
Wow.
I know. That's just
amazing.
What
about the GMO grapes? You know, the ones that are just really huge? You wonder how they got that big?
Well, actually, GMO grapes aren't really huge grapes. Genetically modified grapes are genetically modified so they will be resistant to diseases and stuff. That doesn't particularly mean that they're bigger. It simply means that they're resistant to diseases.
Well, I know they changed the DNA and the RNA, which is a one strand, where DNA is a two strand thing.
Yeah, it
makes me wonder.
They don't really. It's not the whole strand. It's pieces of the DNA that they actually manipulate, and it makes it resistant to diseases. They find the DNA makeup that is, say, susceptible to black rot or something, and they will adjust that so it's resistant to it. Same thing like down here in Florida. We have Pierce disease. They've been working on trying to come up with grapes by manipulating the DNA so it'd be resistant to Pierce disease. They haven't came up with it yet, but they're working on that. But that's really GMO grapes are ones that are manipulating that. And it doesn't particularly make them bigger or anything. Just the type of grape you have is the one that does actually make it bigger. So,
I've seen a huge grape lately. I don't know if it comes from the States or not, but I always wondered if that was a GMO, but I was just curious because I know some countries, such I think Denmark, has banned GMO foods.
A lot of countries have.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Unless they're specifically labeled as GMO, a lot of countries have in Europe.
That's good.
It could be the muscadine grape that you're seeing that's large. The muscadine grape gets to be really quite
it's
a
huge.
Large. Yeah, it does.
You know,
it
different from what I would typically think as a grape, you know, growing up what I thought a grape was.
Yeah, some muscadine grapes can, look like a small golf ball. I mean, the things are just...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of what they look like, a miniature golf ball.
Yeah. So, yeah, it could be the muscadine families and stuff like that, not particularly GMO. But you were saying that you have a friend who has a winery in Oklahoma...
I live in Oklahoma, and I have a friend. She does, like, natal charts. She's an astrologist. She does charts. And they sell wine, and I can't think... I know they've been trying to sell it because they were going to move, and they were... She's originally from Scotland, and they spend a few years in the States, and then they go to Scotland. So I don't know. I don't know if it's still for sale or not. I know it was very inexpensive. It was only like $500,000.
Wow.
You know, to come with 400 vines, and you'd have your own water supply even if you got cut off from water, and they have solar panels. I mean, you could live off the grid there. It's really cool.
Yeah.
Well, I'd have to talk to her to see if she'd want to call in sometime if you wanted to.
Well, definitely, or have her email me, and I would be happy to get in a hold of her too. We can bring her on the program. We can talk to her about the winery. We can talk to her about paranormal.
Well, who knows?
Activity.
Maybe she'll get a buyer if they still want to sell it. So, I mean,
yeah, really.
You never
know.
It's a really nice place.
Lots of listeners
though.
In here. We always always
hope
that
people have
their
own really nice bar, you know, for their winery and. Yeah, I've never been to a winery before.
You've never been to a winery?
There. No, I live in Oklahoma. It's only been recently we've been able to have our
Oklahoma.
Own. It's only been just recently that law passed where they could. That was like within the last 7 years. And there's one west of where I live. I went to the state fair. I bought some of their wine. They had this peach wine for a table wine. It's really good, you know. It's not too harsh, and it's just right for dinner.
Go out and visit wineries. There's lots of them in Oklahoma. What area of Oklahoma do you live in?
I live on the eastern part, the northeast.
Then you're close to Missouri. You're close to Arkansas. The northeastern part of – or the northwestern part of Arkansas, there's a whole bunch of wineries there.
My family makes shine, so, I mean, wine, but – No, I mean, I've talked to some of the family members. We have some old recipes, and my paternal grandmother, that's the side that makes the shine. You know, she was a James. My father's buried close to some of the James family from Jesse and Frank James. Yeah,
that's the area that I grew up in, right up there in Missouri, where the James family is from. Yeah,
but some of them are buried in Hardy, Arkansas. Do you know where Hardy, Arkansas is?
Yes, I do.
That's where some of them are buried. That's where my father is.
Oh, yeah, I know that area there. There's wineries not too far from Hardy, too. There's in that area. So.
I do like wine, you know. That shine's kind of hard on the stomach.
It's hard on everything.
That. There is a peach shine, though. We have that recipe. That one's really good.
It's you take moonshine, you can pretty much make it indie flavor if you want to play with it.
Mm-hmm. It's true. That is true. But as the popularity of it's going up, I'm like, wow. And then when I found out what people actually pay for that, if it's not legal, I'm like, whoa. But I like wine. I like St. Michelle wine from Washington State.
They make very nice wines. Yes, they do.
I like that one. And Whispering Vines, that's in Oklahoma. I like their wine.
And, you know, again, our guest we had on a couple, 3 weeks ago, Barefoot. Barefoot has a big line of wines that are all very pleasant. So those are some of them you need to check out. They're pretty much everywhere, too.
I tried them. They're... Maybe it was just the bottles I tried. I prefer other companies.
Yeah.
But I think they're a nice
big,
company.
Yeah, they got a big line of wines from there, too. Mm-hmm. But to have your friend, what's your friend's first name?
I'm not going to say it unless I know that she wants to be outed. So. But
oh,
I will call her, and I'll give her your address.
Yeah, well, give her my email, allaboutwinebtr.com.
I will, if she wants to.
I'm sorry, allaboutwine101. allaboutwine101@gmail.com
mm-hmm.
is the email address.
Yeah.
And have her get a hold of us.
Though.
Good. I would look forward. I'd love to have her on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to
She's
go to a
winery.
She's got
that Scottish accent. She's got that Scottish accent. Yeah, I probably do. You know, there's one, like I said, on the west side of where I live. And I was thinking about going to that one. It's where I got the peach table wine. It's not Whispering Vines. It's another one. And I really like that lady. Was trying to get her to get a YouTube account. And, you know, a lot of the public, we don't know the difference between a red and a white, like which one has more alcohol. And,
none of them have more, none of them have less. They're,
well, I thought the
wine,
red wines have more of a degree of alcohol than, say, a white wine.
Usually they do, but all wines usually run between 9 and 15% alcohol. That's usually
mm-hmm.
your wine range there, between 9 and 15%. And because it's in that range there, white wines, basically, let me explain to you, and I think I might have mentioned this before in a past program, but when we pick grapes, we pick it at the highest sugar content we can. We call it degrees Brix, which basically, loosely translated means degrees, means percent sugar. So we want to pick the grapes at the highest sugar we can. We throw the grapes into the tank, we add our yeast, we start fermenting. Now, Science
mm-hmm.
101, grapes, when you ferment them, the sugar turns to alcohol.
Alcohol,
so,
yes.
White wines tend to be a little bit sweeter overall, not always, but white wines tend a little bit sweeter. So we stop fermentation before all the sugar is fermented out. So therefore, it gives you a higher alcohol level. Whereas red wines tend to be drier, and dry in wine simply means the lack of sugar or no sweet. That's all dry
uh-huh.
meat, no sweet. So the reds tend to be drier than the whites. And so you ferment more of the sugar out of it, but as you're fermenting more of the sugar out of it, the alcohol level rises. So red wines tend to be a little bit drier and a little bit more alcohol than white wines, which tend to be a little bit sweeter, but not quite as much alcohol.
Now,
so,
what about a port? Is that even more alcohol?
Yes.
And the
ports are fortified. Ports are fortified with brandy. Brandy is distilled.
Okay.
It's from grapes, but it's distilled. And when you distill something, as you know, as in Shine, when you distill something, the alcohol level rises, and you can take it up quite a bit. So when you distill grapes, it gives you higher alcohol. Wine is made from fermented grapes, which limits you on the amount of alcohol somewhat. You can only ferment so much sugar out before you have nothing to ferment and turn to alcohol.
Mm.
So that's just basic, just some basic lesson there for you on how it is. So if you're looking for a wine and you want to know if it's sweet or dry, look at the alcohol level. If the alcohol level is high, then it usually is a drier wine. If the alcohol level is low, it's usually a sweeter wine.
Now, I do know outside the Navajo Nation, you can buy alcohol. Can't buy it in the nation. And they have a very high alcohol content on their wines. And even
yeah.
beers have a higher alcohol content. Maybe those must be port wines then.
They might be fortified. They might be adding stuff to it. But most wines are reds usually stop around 15 or 16% alcohol. That's usually,
mm-hmm.
you'll find a few that'll jump it up to 17%, but not too many. But most of them are right around, and overall, 14 is about a good average for red wines, I'd say.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. I mean, I've been learning quite a bit about wine lately. And
Good. Well, all the programs I've done are all available on archive. You can always go back and check any of them out.
Well, I certainly will. I think I will.
We've had programs on all that stuff. And so, yeah, I'm thank you for listening. We do appreciate that. And have your friend get in touch with me. And
I will.
We'd love to have her on the program, and we'll tell her about her winery, and maybe someone would like to be interested in purchasing it, and we'd love to talk to her about her paranormal activities. And I used to do charts myself many years ago. I've gotten away from
really?
It.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I used to do that years ago.
Quite interesting. I know there's a show much later than yours about our nation's chart and where it's going, you know, because countries have charts as well.
Right, yeah, and everything does. People, states, countries, you know, cities, everything. You can trace all that stuff. So, and everybody looks at all sorts of aspects of it, and all of it means something.
Sure.
And none of it does. It depends on who you're talking to.
What is unique about your chart, your natal chart, or your current chart?
You know, it's not just people. Confuse the fact that it's not just your birth sign. I'm a Taurus, but it's not just the fact that I'm a Taurus. It's your rising sign. Your rising sign in conjunction with your birth sign really makes up more of your personality than just your birth sign.
Oh, and I agree. I was talking about like your birth chart, you know, what's unique about yours. I find that everybody has a few things that are a little bit quirky in their natal chart.
Yeah. Honestly, it's been so many years since I've pulled the thing out and looked at it and done anything with it. I've just I've lost track of it. I've lost track of what it is and where I am on it. So, I've got a lot of stars, a lot of planets in Taurus and in Scorpio. So,
is your Venus in Scorpio?
Yes, it is. As a matter of fact. Yeah.
Oh, my Lord.
So.
Okay.
But.
Babe, you don't understand why I'm laughing.
I know. I understand.
Venus has to do with your sexuality.
Yes, I know.
Yeah. Well, just for the people that are listening. So you can look up what that means, Venus and Scorpio.
Yeah. So. All about wine. We'll get like we said in the opening. Sometimes we get off the topic, but we'll get back to it. So have your friend call, and
I will.
Again, thank you, Angela, for listening. I do appreciate it. Thanks for calling
thank
in.
Thank you for having the show. It sounds like a delightful show. So.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. Check out the archives, and
sure
look forward
will.
To having you be a
Maybe
listener.
I'll learn
every
some more.
There you go. And go to a winery. You need to do that.
I will. I mean, I have two kids, and. You know,
it does make any difference.
We make
sometimes
choices.
If you have two kids, you have to go to wineries. That's a good
thing. Yeah, I hear you. Of course, there's always shine, but.
Yeah, but still, though.
Wine
you know,
is
wine
much easier on the system, I will say, you know.
So,
all right. Then. Well, I'll let you go. Thank you for having
in.
Me on.
And, well, I'm glad you called in and passed information on to your friend and get an opportunity to call us back some other time.
All right. I certainly will. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Bye now. All right. We had Angela from Oklahoma just called in, give us talk to us for a while there. Thanks, Angela, for that. I appreciate the phone call and the information and stuff like that. Hopefully she'll get a hold of her friend and we'll talk to someone that knows a little bit about spirits and apparitions and also has a winery. So we'll get them on over the next week or so possibly here. And again, we were going back to this little quick quiz here. What percentage of wine produced in the United States comes from California? 90%, amazingly high number there, amazingly high number, 90%. Next one, what percentage of all the grapes grown in the United States are made into wine? 59%. Now, that may seem a little low, but you have to realize, too, that table grapes are also jams and jellies, raisins, all that is from grapes. No telling what other stuff I'm not even thinking of right now. So only 59%. How many jobs in the United States are associated with the wine industry? As of this report, 820,000. And I would tend to think there's more than that. That seems low to me, because every time I look at figures from different states, those numbers are usually higher than that for each state. What's the average price of a bottle of wine in the United States? Now, this is the average price of a bottle of wine in the United States. And I think this is going to surprise you. $6.30 is the average price for a wine in the United States. That seems awful low to me, but you have to realize that most wines that sell in the United States cost between $7 and $15. And if it's in that price range, that's what people are buying. And so therefore it keeps that average down. Not a lot of people out there are buying the high-end wines. How much was the most expensive bottle of wine that was ever sold? Now, this is interesting here. It was an 816-year-old wine sold at auction in 1993 for $100 million. $100 million. No comment needs to be made on that any more than that. $100 million for 1993, or in 1993 for an 816-year-old bottle of wine. What is the fourth largest grape-producing state in the United States? The fourth largest. Michigan. Michigan is a lot of grapes growing up there. We've done shows on Michigan, and we've talked in a lot of wineries up there. Next one. How many bottles of non-sparkling wine are bottled each month in the United States? Non-sparkling wine each month in the United States. About 50 million bottles of non-sparkling wine. I don't know why they separated that from sparkling, but they did. Nine, about how many tons of wine grapes were harvested in 2012 in California? In California alone, over 3.7 million tons. Wow. And that was wine grapes. That's not counting raisins and a lot of other grapes. They big raisin industry too. Next one, what is the ideal temperature to serve a glass of white wine? Between 50 and 55 degrees Fahrenheit. That's why a couple of hours in the refrigerator, a couple of hours in the refrigerator is all it takes to get that white wine. Don't be storing it in there forever. Next one. Next to Disneyland, what is the most popular place to travel to in California? And this one should be rather easy, considering that everyone is we're on the program. The wine region. Each year, wine regions in California. Now, when they say wine regions, I'm sure they mean everything from Temecula to Napa to Livermore to Paso Robles, Monterey. But the wine region in California gets 14.8 million tourists a year. And then the last one, what percentage of Americans drink wine on Super Bowl Sunday? All the people in the United States, 33% drink wine on Super Bowl Sunday. Wow. Good. It's growing. I mean, the big game Sunday. Yeah, I don't want to say Super Bowl because it might be copyrighted. NFL needs their money. Wow, 33% people drink wine on Super Bowl Sunday. So, a little trivia there, something to throw out on your next party you go to. Got a few other things to talk about here. Again, thanks, Angela, for calling in. That was a good conversation, fun. As soon as this pops up here, I got a thing. I started to talk about this a couple of weeks ago, and I told you I was going to follow up on it and tell you more about it. Massive Chinese counterfeit ring. There was a guy in China who has been doing wine counterfeiting for quite some time. And he was finally busted. It's a phenomenal size ring that he was running. They were arrested on a $32 million with more than $32 million of fake wine in the Yantai area of China. In dollar value, this could be the largest bust of its kind in China and possibly the world. They were counterfeiting wines like Chateau Lafite Rothschild, Chateau Latour, Menton Rothschild, Beauvale, Pichon Baron, Pinsfield, and a lot of other famous brands. The investigated and arrest follows a July 2013 meeting in Beijing with the EU and in cooperation with China and the European Union. In the raid, police found the supplies needed to make counterfeit wines, make rolls of labels, bottles, corks, etc. 10 suspects were arrested. More than 40,000 bottles of fake wine were seized in the raid. The suspects were buying inexpensive wine and placing it into bottles of the famous and expensive counterfeit brands they were selling. The suspects are thought to have been selling the wines in various popular Chinese cities, Shanghai, Beijing, just, you know, a whole bunch, and I'm not going to try to pronounce all these Chinese cities because I will destroy the names, but I am sure. This is not the first time wine counterfeiting rings have been busted in China, by the way. Last year, a large operation in Shanghai was discovered holding over 350 cases of fake Chateau Lafite Rothschild and over 60 cases of Chateau Margaux. The total amount of wines confiscated in that raid was valued at close to $1.6 million, but nowhere near the $32 million in this latest bust. It's not just first growth wine of Bordeaux that is being forged in China, but they're also doing others. This has happened to brands like the Great Wall and Dynasty. These are Chinese brands that they're also copying and selling there. The problem is that it's hurting the growth industry in Chinese wines because people are getting to the point where they don't trust them. The recent construction of a $70 million winery, $70 million euro, not winery, $70 million euro winery. Boy, I got to say that right because the euro is worth more money than the dollar. So the recent construction of a $70 million euro winery in the Ningxoy province, Chateau Shengu Mosur, I believe that's probably wrong, along with significant investments by LVMH, the owners of Lafite Rothschild, and others to produce wine in China, clearly demonstrate the potential for Chinese wines to sell to the local population. China is also importing a lot of wines, by the way, too. It's becoming a very big import country from the United States. With its newfound wealth, China is really starting to drink a lot of wines. Its huge population remains one of the largest importers of French wine. China imported almost 68 million gallons of wine in 2012. The amount makes it the largest, or the fifth largest, wine importer in the world, placing them ahead of England. It's not only simple counterfeit wines of famous labels and wines bottles in China that remains an ongoing issue. Counterfeiting takes place all over the world. Due to the relatively newness of some Chinese brands, consumers don't know what they're looking for on the labels, so it's easier to counterfeit Chinese labels. Artwork, trademark names, and stuff like that aren't that well known, and so it's easier to make counterfeit bottles out of that and fool the customers because people aren't aware of it. The bottles are passed off as originals and the purchasers are not aware. And a lot of times too, when the Chinese who are becoming big wine drinkers find wines from other countries and stuff, their inability to read French or English makes it even more difficult. And they are buying wines that are really, you know, more noticeable as counterfeits, but they don't know, and so they're paying much more than they should. Another method used to produce counterfeit wine takes place all over the world. The counterfeits purchase empty wine bottles of wine and simply refill them with cheap wine. They recork the bottles, replace the capsules, and sell the bottles as new. This is a crime that's easier in creation. So it's becoming more controlled and more regulated on the bottles and what's happening with the bottles. But they can't completely do it, because if somebody calls in and wants a certain type of bottle, they'll sell it to them. So the labels and stuff like that are becoming a problem. To help reduce sales of counterfeit wine, many of the world's expensive wine brands have started using the proof tag system, which uses a variety of stickers containing information encoded on the stickers that cannot be removed without breaking the sticker. High-end restaurants, hotels, collectors, and auction houses regularly smash empty bottles after consuming them to avoid their re-entry into the marketplace. The most famous accused wine counterfeiter, Rudy Kernawan, remains in jail awaiting trial in New York State. His case, which appears to show his overwhelming guilt, was supposed to come to trial in September 2013, which was just last month. I haven't heard any more. The most recent delay was caused by Rudy Kernawan hiring a new defense team to act as his attorney. If you are interested in learning more about him, that is spelled R-U-D-Y, Rudy Kernawan, K-U-R-N-I-A-W-A-N. And a lot of interesting articles about him, and he flaunted it. It was just amazing how he would flaunt the fact that he was doing this stuff and thinking he was almost untouchable. So 7,000 fake cases, $32 million of wine that was a value of $32 million of fake wine coming out of China. That is just almost scary if that much wine is being thrown into the marketplace and dumped into the marketplace. That is not real. Next thing I want to read you here, and this was something I thought was rather interesting. This is something I noticed here. This article, and let me go through this article quickly with you here. This was in the Los Angeles Times science section, and I'm not sure up to this article, and I couldn't find a date, but I think it's been within the last, month and a half. No date on it at all, which is really strange because they usually have dates all over these things. But it's when within the last couple of months, this article here. But this article is saying that it says it might seem that the range of scents humans can detect is infinite, but scientists have managed to sort through them and sort them all into 10 basic categories. The classifications are meant to be the olfactory equivalent of the 5 basic tastes. Sweet, or 6 actually now. 6 basic, and that throws off the date a little bit there too. 6 basic tastes: sweet, sour, salty, bitter, umami, and kami. Come up with these 10 tastes, neuroscientists turned to a 30-year-old database that contained profiles of 144 odors. What they did is they set people down, they had them taste and smell stuff and all that, and had them smell stuff and then describe the odor. Using statistics, they then analyzed how the 146 words were used and how they related to one another. Some were always used together, like fruity and honey. Others were never paired together, like fecal and minty. Words that were hardly used at all were ignored in the analysis. After a while, they totaled everything and came up with 10 basic aromas, or 10 basic scents, which to me is, I don't know, 10 basic scents. The result of the 10 key odor categories are fragrant, woody and resinous, minty and peppermint, sweet, which you can't really smell sweet because it's a taste, it's not a scent, chemical, popcorn, lemon, fruity, non-citrus, pungent, and decayed. These are the 10 basic scents they came up with. Now, odors in the fragrant category included lavender, soap, and cologne, while freshly cut grass and mushrooms gave off a woody, resinous smell. Eucalyptus, camphor, and tea leaves were considered minty and peppermint scents. Sweet odors included vanilla, almond, and chocolate. I don't know. Kerosene and ammonia fell into the chemical category. Butter, molasses, and fried chicken were lumped into the popcorn group. Oranges and other citrus fruits were grouped as lemon odors, while the other fruits went into their own category. Rounding out the list was pungent odors like garlic and sour milk, and decaying smells such as rotten meat and manure. And these are what they said. That's all you really smell. There's no others, nothing else. Now, the reason I read you this article is because of another article that was published in IOL Lifestyle Magazine. And this article was questioning the fact of the descriptions of wine. The article states, can a wine really taste of wet dog? Probably not. But this article was referring to that list of the 10 things, the 10 smells. And the author of this article, written by Andrew Neither, lives in London. He says, simply for those of us who pay to drink wine, never high, has set a new low. This summer, a disgruntled Californian winemaker ran a study purportedly showing that wine judges' results were random. It was greeted in the media like taste tests supposedly showing we can't tell as the bubbles from Dom Perignon with derisive hoots of joy. So now a University of Pittsburgh study has dismissed most of the terms critics use to describe wine smells as meaningless. They brought it down to the 10 basic scents that I just told you about. They are suggesting that it would be better if wine critics and sommeliers and wine people would talk solely in terms of percentages and mixtures of those. So it's like 30% fruity and 10% minty, an incredible wine. Or it's showing, hints of popcorn with, and these are the 10 scents. Some of the grape and techniques tend to make wines with obvious flavors. There's a good chance anyone will taste a black currant note in some Australian camps or an oak vanilla in the average California Chardonnay. But you've got all these others that people used to describe. Farmyardy, he states here, would seem rather pretentious. But anyone who is familiar with wines and knows farmyard, it works. And this is something I tell people whenever I'm talking to them about scents, is the fact that you don't know a scent unless you're familiar with it. So some of the scents that are used to describe wines won't always work with someone if they're not familiar with that scent. It smells like Chanel No. 5 perfume. Well, that's great and it's wonderful if you know what Chanel No. 5 perfume smells like. But if you don't, then it's meaningless. And some of these wine critics, some of these wine experts, some of these sommeliers tend to, I think, personally, go a little bit overboard in their descriptions, and people just don't really correlate it to it. When I teach class, I try to tell people it's subtle. It's subtle flavors that you get. It's subtle aromas. It's not overpowering. Every once in a while, you're going to pour wine in a glass. It's going to jump out at you and you go, oh, wow, I really, really smell a chocolatey out of that cab. But most of the time, they're very subtle. And, but if you narrow it down to just 10 basic scents, that's it. That's all that your nose can, and everything else is just, pretentious? So, I don't know. But I saw that. I thought that was interesting. And they're saying that, this is what your nose can do, and this is what's available now. Thank you, Angela, for the phone call. She jumped into the time there a little bit. I was going to talk about some haunted wineries that are around this country, but that doesn't mean that we can't continue on into the first week of November and get her guest or her friend as a guest on then and talk about wineries, haunted wineries at that time, which is a good possibility that we can continue that conversation about haunted wineries into November. I'm going to close it tonight. And thank you all for listening. Thank you all for tuning in. Always appreciate it. Angela, thank you for the phone call from Oklahoma there. And appreciate that. You need to go to a winery, Angela. Told you that. Two kids or not. Sometimes, you start finding wines, you'll start finding that that's a better alternative than that shine. That shine will tear you up. Let me tell you, girl. So, festival this week. We had our Pasco Pet Fest last Saturday. Great, great fest. If you couldn't make it to it, you really, really missed out on something. It was fantastic. It was fun. We had a lot of vendors. We had a lot of people. Just really, really a great time. It was a lot of work. It lasted longer than we expected, which was great, and it's wonderful. And we look forward to doing one next year. But no Pasco Pet Fest this week, but we do have a festival this weekend, a wine fest, as we do a couple times a month. And so let me play this here, be back, and give this to you quickly here.
Coming up this Saturday at Florida Estates Winery, it's Wine Fest, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Enjoy live music, have a little fun, and shop our vendors providing unique handmade items and some brand names you have known for years. Participate in an informative wine tasting with wine expert and show host, Ron. Sample some of Florida Estates Winery's world-class wines. Shopping is always fun, and Wine Fest is a great way to pick up unique gift items. Come out to Florida Estates Winery and enjoy the weekend with us. Listen to live music and shop under the giant oak trees while enjoying a glass of your favorite wine. This is a family event, and pets are welcome at Florida Estates Winery. See you there. Florida Estates Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call 813-996-2113 or email corp@flewn.com. That's C-O-R-P at F-L-E-W-N.com for more information. Florida Estates Winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m.
And there we go. So come out to the winery this weekend and Saturday during the festival. We've got entertainment. We've got vendors. We've got wine tastings. And we'd love to see you come out and join us. We have we've been confirmed. We are going to start being on AFRN, Armed Forces Radio Network. They've revamped their schedule. They're doing a whole bunch of stuff with AFRN. And we were invited to join and be part of their lineup. We are thrilled to be part of the AFRN lineup. We are excited about it, and it's great. I mentioned, I think last week or the week before last, I used to listen to AFRN when I was over in Vietnam, and it was really a nice thing to be able to listen to AFRN and the programming they have, and it's exciting to know that I'm going to be part of it now, and All About Wine, Mike and I are real thrilled about this. So check out their website, Armed Forces Radio Network, AFRN. Check out their website. Check out their Facebook page. And thanks, AFRN, for inviting us to join you. We are thrilled that we are going to be part of your family now. Tune in next week. Thank you all for listening this week. And I'll don't forget, next week we have Lenora and Larry from Bunker Hill. And we're going to be talking about ghost, and we're going to be talking about wine, and we're going to be talking about spirits and all sorts of stuff there. So look forward to seeing you next week, and have yourself a good one. Bye now.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery.
Florida Estates Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida, 4 miles west of Interstate 75 or east of US 19 and US 41. For more information on Florida Estates Winery, visit the website at floridaestateswines.com or call area code 813-996-2113. The email address is corp@floon.com. That's corp@floon.com. For more information on All About Wine and future shows, please like us on Facebook at facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr or visit our website at allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available as a free download on iTunes and on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Follow the Armed Forces Radio Network on Twitter at the AFRN and on Facebook at facebook.com/Armed Forces Radio. Thank you for listening to this show. We'll see you next time on All About Wine.